Chapter 45. That God's act of intelligence is his essence. From the fact that God is intelligent, it follows that his act of intelligence is his essence, for intelligence is the act of an intelligent being, existing within that being and not passing on to something outside of it, as heating passes into the thing heated, for the intelligible suffers nothing through being understood. But the one who understands is perfected. Now whatever is in God is the divine essence. Therefore God's act of intelligence is the divine essence, the divine existence, and God himself, since God is his essence and his existence. Further, the act of intelligence is compared to the intellect as existence to essence, but God's existence is his essence, as proved above. Therefore God's act of intelligence is his intellect. Now the divine intellect is God's essence, otherwise it would be accidental to God. Therefore the divine act of intelligence must needs be his essence. Moreover, second act is more perfect than first act, even as consideration is more perfect than knowledge. Now God's knowledge or intellect is his very essence, if he is intelligent as shown above. No perfection belongs to him by participation, but by essence, as already proved. If, therefore, his act of consideration be not his essence, something will be more noble and perfect than his essence, and thus he will not be in the summit of perfection and goodness, and consequently he will not be first. Again, intelligence is the act of the intelligent. If then God being intelligent is not his act of intelligence, he must be compared to it as potentiality to act, and so there will be potentiality and act in God, which is impossible, as we have proved above. Again, every substance is for the sake of its operation. If therefore God's operation is other than the divine substance, his end will be other than himself, and thus God will not be his own goodness, since the good of a thing is its end. If, however, God's act of intelligence is his existence, his act of intelligence must be simple, eternal, unchangeable, existing only in act, and all those things which have been proved about the divine existence. Wherefore God is not in potentiality to intelligence, nor does he begin to understand a thing anew, nor is his act of intelligence subject to any change or composition whatsoever. Chapter 46. That God understands by nothing else than his essence. From what has been proved above, it is made evident that the divine intellect understands by no other intelligible species but the divine essence, for the intelligible species is the formal principle of the intellectual operation, even as the form of every agent is the principle of that agent's proper operation. Now the intellectual operation of God is his essence, as we have shown. Wherefore something else would be the principle and cause of the divine essence, if the divine intellect understood by some intelligible species other than his essence, and this is in contradiction with what has been shown above. Again, the intellect is made actually intelligent by the intelligible species just as sense is made actually sentient by the sensible species. Hence the intelligible species is compared to the intellect as act of potentiality, and consequently if the divine intellect were to understand by a species other than itself, it would be in potentiality with respect to something, and this is impossible, as we have proved above. Moreover, an intelligible species that is accessory to the essence of the intellect in which it is, has an accidental being, for which reason our knowledge is reckoned among the accidents. Now in God there can be no accident, as proved above. Therefore there is no species in his intellect besides the divine essence. Further, an intelligible species is the image of something understood. Wherefore if in the divine intellect there be an intelligible species besides its essence, it will be the image of something understood. Either, therefore, it will be the image of the divine essence or of some other thing. But it cannot be the image of the divine essence, for then the divine essence would not be intelligible by itself, and this species would make it intelligible. Nor again can there be in the divine intellect a species distinct from its essence and representative of some other thing, for this image would be imprinted thereon by something, not however by the divine intellect itself, because then the same thing would be agent and patient, and there would be an agent which imprints not its own but another's image on the patient, and thus not every agent would produce its like, nor again by another, for then there would be an agent previous to the divine intellect. Therefore there cannot possibly be in it an intelligible species besides its essence. Moreover, God's act of intelligence is his essence, as we have proved. Therefore if he understood by a species that is not his essence, it would be by something other than his essence. But this is impossible. Therefore he does not understand by a species that is not his essence. Chapter 47. That God understands himself perfectly. It is furthermore clear from the above that God understands himself perfectly, for since the intellect is directed by the intelligible species to the thing understood, the perfection of intellectual operation depends on two things. One is that the intelligible species be perfectly conformed to the thing understood. The other is that it be perfectly united to the intellect, and this is all the more so, according as the intellect is endowed with greater efficacy in understanding. Now the divine essence, which is the intelligible species whereby the divine intellect understands, is absolutely the same as God himself, and is altogether identified with his intellect. Therefore God understands himself most perfectly. Further, a material thing is made intelligible by being abstracted from matter and from material conditions. Wherefore that which by its nature is severed from matter and from material conditions, is by its very nature intelligible. Now every intelligible is understood according as it is actually one with the intelligent, and God is himself intelligent, as we have proved. Therefore since he is altogether immaterial, and is absolutely one with himself, he understands himself most perfectly. Again, a thing is actually understood through the unification of the intellect in act and the intelligible in act. Now the divine intellect is always intellect in act, since nothing is in potentiality and imperfect in God, and God's essence is by itself perfectly intelligible, as shown above. Since, then, the divine intellect and the divine essence are one, as stated above, it is evident that God understands himself perfectly, for God is both his own intellect and his own essence. Moreover, whatever is in anyone in an intelligible manner, is understood by him. Now the divine essence is in God in an intelligible manner, for God's natural being and his intelligible being are one and the same, since his being is his act of intelligence. Therefore God understands his essence. Therefore he understands himself, since he is his very essence. Further, the acts of the intellect, as of the other powers of the soul, are distinguished according to their objects. Hence the more perfect the intelligible, the more perfect will the operation of the intellect be. Now the most perfect intelligible is the divine essence, since it is the most perfect act and the first truth. And the operation of the divine intellect is also the most excellent, since it is the divine being itself, as we have shown. Therefore God understands himself. Again, all the perfections of things are found eminently in God. Among other perfections found in created things is that of understanding God, since the intellectual nature whose perfection it is to understand stands above others, and God is the most excellent intelligible. Therefore God, most of all, understands himself. This is confirmed by divine authority, for the apostle says 1 Corinthians 2:10 that the Spirit of God searcheth the deep things of God. Chapter 48. That God knows only himself first and per se. From the foregoing it follows that God first and per se knows himself alone, for that thing alone is known first and per se by whose species the intellect understands, because the operation is proportionate to the form which is the principle of the operation. Now that by which God understands is nothing else than his essence, as we have proved. That which is understood by him first and per se is nothing else than himself. Again, it is impossible to understand simultaneously several things first and per se, since one operation cannot terminate simultaneously in several things. Now God understands himself sometimes, as we have proved. Therefore if he understands something else by way of an object understood first and per se, It follows that his intellect is changed from consideration to consideration of that thing, but this thing is less excellent than he. Therefore, the divine intellect would be changed for the worse, which is impossible. Moreover, the operations of the intellect are distinguished in relation to their objects. If, therefore, God understands himself and something other than himself as principal object, he will have several intellectual operations. Therefore, either his essence will be divided into several parts, or he will have an intellectual operation that is not his substance, both of which have been proved to be impossible. It follows that nothing is known by God as understood first and per se, except his essence. Again, the intellect, in so far as it is distinct from the object of its intelligence, is in potentiality in its regard. If then something else is understood by God first and per se, it will follow that he is in potentiality in respect of something else, and this is impossible, as we have shown above. Further, the thing understood is the perfection of the one who understands, because the intellect is perfect in so far as it actually understands. And this is through its being one with the thing understood. Therefore, if something other than God be first understood by him, something else will be his perfection and more excellent than he. But this is impossible. Moreover, the knowledge of one who understands is the product of many things understood. Accordingly, if many things are known by God as known principally and per se, it follows that God's knowledge is composed of many, and thus either God's essence will be composite, or knowledge will be accidental to God. But either of these is clearly impossible from what has been said. It remains, therefore, that that which is understood by God first and per se is nothing else than his substance. Further, the intellectual operation takes its species and excellence from that which is understood first and per se, since this is its object. If therefore God understood a thing other than himself, as though it were understood first and per se, his intellectual operation would derive its species and excellence from that which is other than himself. But this is impossible, since his operation is his essence, as we have shown. It is accordingly impossible for that which God understands first and per se to be other than himself. Chapter 49. That God knows things other than himself. From the fact that God knows himself first and per se, we must conclude that he knows things other than himself in himself. For the knowledge of an effect is sufficiently obtained from knowledge of the cause, wherefore we are said to know a thing when we know its cause. Now God by his essence is the cause of being in other things. Since therefore he knows his own essence most fully, we must conclude that he knows other things also. Further, the likeness of every effect pre-exists somewhat in its cause, since every agent produces its like. Now whatever is in something else, is therein according to the mode of the thing in which it is. If, therefore, God is the cause of certain things, since by his nature he is intellectual, the likeness of his effect will be in him intelligibly. Now that which is in a subject intelligibly, is understood thereby. Therefore God understands things other than himself in himself. Moreover, whoever knows a thing perfectly, knows whatever can be said truly of that thing, and whatever is becoming thereto by its nature. Now it is becoming to God by his nature to be the cause of other things. Since then he knows himself perfectly, he knows that he is a cause, and this is impossible unless he knows his effect somewhat. Now this is something other than himself, for nothing is cause of itself. Therefore God knows things other than himself. Accordingly, taking these two conclusions together, it is evident that God knows himself as the first and per se object of his knowledge, and other things as seen in his essence. This truth is explicitly declared by Dionysius Div. Nom. 7. As follows: he looks upon singulars not by casting his eye on each one, but he knows all things as one, contained in their cause. And further on, divine wisdom knows other things by knowing itself. Moreover, the authority of Holy Writ apparently bears witness to the same statement. For in the Psalm, it is said of God, he hath looked forth from his high sanctuary, as though he saw other things from his exalted self. Chapter 50. That God has proper knowledge of all things. Since, however, some have said that God has none but a universal knowledge of other things, in the sense that he knows them as beings, through knowing the nature of being from his knowledge of himself, it remains to be shown that God knows all other things, as distinct from one another and from God. This is to know things by their proper ideas. In evidence of this, let us suppose that God is the cause of every being, which is clear to a certain extent from what has been said above, and will be more fully proved further on. Accordingly, then, there can be nothing in a thing without its being caused by him indirectly or directly. Now, if the cause be known, its effect is known. Wherefore, all that is in anything whatsoever can be known if God be known, as well as all the causes intervening between God and the thing. Now, God knows himself and all the causes that intervene between him and anything whatever, for it has been shown already that he knows himself perfectly. And through knowing himself he knows whatever proceeds from him immediately, and again through knowing this, he knows whatever proceeds therefrom immediately, and so on as regards every intervening cause until the ultimate effect. Therefore God knows whatever is in a thing. Now this is to have proper and complete knowledge of a thing, namely, to know whatever is in a thing, whether common or proper. Therefore God has proper knowledge of things, according as they are distinct from one another. Further, whatever acts by intellect, has knowledge of what it does, as regards the proper idea of the thing done, because the knowledge of the doer appoints the form to the thing done. Now God is cause of things by his intellect, since his being is his act of intelligence, and everything acts in so far as it is actual. Therefore he knows his effect properly, according as it is distinct from others. Moreover, the distinction of things cannot arise from chance, for it has a fixed order. Hence it follows that the distinction among things proceeds from the intention of some cause, but it cannot proceed from the intention of a cause that acts from natural necessity, because nature is determined to one thing, so that nothing that acts from natural necessity can have an intention in relation to several things considered as distinct from one another. It remains therefore that the distinction among things arises from the intention of a cause endowed with knowledge. Now it would seem proper to an intellect to consider the distinction among things. Wherefore Anaxagoras declared that an intellect was the principle of distinction. But taken as a whole, the distinction of things cannot proceed from the intention of any second cause, since all such causes are included in the universality of distinct effects. Wherefore it belongs to the first cause, which is of itself distinct from all others, to intend the distinction among all things. Therefore God knows things as distinct. Again, whatsoever God knows, he knows most perfectly, for in him are all perfections, as in that which is simply perfect, as shown above. Now that which is known only in general is not known perfectly, since the chief things belonging thereto are ignored, namely its ultimate perfections, whereby its own being is perfected. Wherefore by such knowledge as this, a thing is known potentially rather than actually. Accordingly, if God, by knowing his essence, knows all things in general, it follows that he has also proper knowledge of things. Further, whoever knows a nature knows the per se accidents of that nature. Now the per se accidents of being as such are one and many, as is proved in 4 Metaphysics. Wherefore if God, by knowing his essence, knows the nature of being in general, it follows that he knows multitude. Now multitude is inconceivable without distinction. Therefore he understands things as distinct from one another. Moreover, whoever knows perfectly a universal nature knows the mode in which that nature can be had. Thus he who knows whiteness knows that it is susceptible of increase and decrease. Now the various degrees of being result from various modes of being. Therefore if God by knowing himself knows the universal nature of being, and this not imperfectly, since all imperfection is far removed from him, as we have proved above, follows that he knows all the degrees of being, and so he has proper knowledge of things other than himself. Further, whoever knows a thing perfectly, knows all that is in that thing. Now God knows himself perfectly. Therefore he knows all that is in him in relation to his active power. But all things according to their proper forms are in him in relation to his active power, since he is the principle of all being. Therefore he has proper knowledge of all things. Again, whoever knows a nature, knows whether that nature is communicable, for one would not know the nature of an animal perfectly unless one knew that it is communicable to several. Now the divine nature is communicable according to likeness. Therefore God knows in how many ways a thing can be like his essence. But the diversity of forms arises from the different ways in which things reflect the divine essence. Wherefore the philosopher calls a natural form a godlike thing. Therefore God has knowledge of things in reference to their proper forms. Moreover, men and other beings endowed with knowledge know things as many and distinct from one another. Accordingly, if God knows not things as distinct from one another, it follows that he is most foolish, as in the opinion of those who asserted that God is ignorant of discord, which all know, an opinion that the philosopher considers inadmissible. We are also taught this by the authority of canonical scripture, for it is stated, God saw all the things that he had made, and they were very good, and neither is there any creature invisible in his sight. All things are naked and open to his eyes. Chapters 51 and 52. Reasons for inquiring how there is a multitude of things understood in the divine intellect. Lest, however, from the fact that God understands many things we be led to conclude that there is composition in the divine intellect, we must examine in what way the things he understands are many. Now they cannot be understood to be many, as though the many things God understands had a distinct being in him. For these understood things would either be the same as the divine essence, and thus we should have multitude in the essence of God, which has been disproved above, in many ways, or else they would be added to the divine essence, and thus there would be something accidental in God, and this again we have proved above to be impossible. Nor again can it be admitted that these intelligible forms exist per se, as Plato, in order to avoid the above impossibilities, seems to have maintained by holding the existence of ideas. Because the forms of natural things cannot exist apart from matter, since neither are they understood without matter. And even if the above supposition were admissible, it would not suffice to explain how God understands many things. For since the aforesaid forms are outside the essence of God, if God were unable without them to understand the multitude of things, as is requisite for the perfection of his intellect, it would follow that the perfection of his understanding depends on something else, and consequently the perfection also of his being. Since his being is his act of intelligence, the contrary of which has been shown above. Again, since all of that is beside his essence is caused by him, as we shall prove further on, it must needs be that if the aforesaid forms are outside God, they are caused by him. Now he is the cause of things by his intellect, as we shall show further on. Therefore, in order that these intelligible forms may exist, it is required that previously in the order of nature God should understand them, and consequently God does not understand multitude through the fact that many intelligible things exist per se outside him. Again, the intelligible in act is the intellect in act, even as the sensible in act is the sense in act. But so far as the intelligible is distinct from the intellect, both are in potentiality, as appears in the senses, for neither is the sight actually seeing, nor the visible actually seen, except when the sight is informed by the species of the visible object, so that one thing results from sight and visible. Accordingly, if the intelligible objects of God are outside his intellect, it will follow that his intellect is in potentiality, and likewise his intelligible objects, and thus he will need something to reduce him to actuality. But this is impossible, since this thing would be previous to him. Further, the object understood must be in the intellect. Therefore, in order to explain how God understands the multitude of things, it is not enough to suppose that the forms of things exist per se outside the divine intellect, but it is necessary that they be in the divine intellect itself. From these very same reasons it appears that it cannot be admitted that the multitude of the aforesaid intelligibles is in some other beside the divine intellect, either that of the soul, or that of an angel or intelligence. For in that case the divine intellect, in respect of one of its operations, would depend on some secondary intellect, which also is impossible. Even as things that subsist in themselves are from God, so are those that exist in a subject. Wherefore the existence of the aforesaid intelligibles in some secondary intellect presupposes God's act of intelligence whereby he is their cause. It would also follow that God's intellect is in potentiality, since his intelligibles would not be united to him. Even as each thing has its proper being, so has it its proper operation. Wherefore it is impossible that because one intellect is disposed to operate, therefore another exercises intellectual operation, but only that same intellect where we find the disposition, even as a thing is by its own essence and not by another's. Hence it does not become possible for the first intellect to understand multitude, through the fact that many intelligibles are in some second intellect. Chapter 53. Solution of the foregoing doubt. The foregoing doubt 1 may be easily solved if we examine carefully how things understood are in the understanding, and in order that, as far as possible, we may proceed from our intellect to the knowledge of the divine intellect. It must be observed that the external objects which we understand do not exist in our intellect according to their own nature, but it is necessary that our intellect contain their species whereby it becomes intellect in act, and being in act by this species as by its proper form, it understands the object itself. And yet the act of understanding is not an act passing into the intellect, as heating passes into the object heated, but it remains in the one who understands although it bears a relation to the object understood, for the very reason that the aforesaid species, which is the formal principle of intellectual operation, is the image of that object. It must furthermore be observed that the intellect informed by the species of the object, by understanding produces in itself a kind of intention of the object understood, which intention reflects the nature of that object and is expressed in the definition thereof. This indeed is necessary, since the intellect understands indifferently a thing absent or present, and in this point agrees with the imagination. Yet the intellect has this besides, that it understands a thing as separate from material conditions, without which it does not exist in reality, and this is impossible unless the intellect forms for itself the aforesaid intention. Now this understood intention, since it is the term, so to speak, of the intellectual operation, is distinct from the intelligible species which makes the intellect in act, and which we must look upon as the principle of the intellectual operation, albeit each is an image of the object understood, since it is because the intelligible species, which is the form of the intellect and the principle of understanding, is the image of the external object, that the intellect in consequence forms an intention like that object, for such as a thing is, such is the effect of its operation. And since the understood intention is like a particular thing, it follows that the intellect by forming this intention understands that thing. On the other hand, the divine intellect understands by no species other than his essence, as we have proved. And yet his essence is the likeness of all things. Wherefore it follows from this that the concept of the divine intellect, according as he understands himself, which concept is his word, is the likeness not only of God himself understood, but also of all things of which the divine essence is the likeness. Accordingly, many things can be understood by God, by one intelligible species which is the divine essence, and by one understood intention which is the divine word. Dash.